We're improving not for our neighbor, for our guru, or for whomsoever. We are doing it to improving our state of mind. And this practice is a path, and any path begins somewhere and goes somewhere. And don't forget, it begins where we are. So we don't need to be too fancy that we are already close to where we're going to go. We begin where we are. It might be very, very far away from where we want to go. But this doesn't matter. It doesn't help. We begin where we are. And so I've started to give you some simple steps. And you have the experience of how to follow them throughout your life and your day, not only here. How you kind of bring the practice into your life. And it is not something extra bringing into your life, but it is practicing within the life. So, the first step, and we are rehearsing it now, no writing, practicing. I'm still just give you the words. The first step was or is to arrive. To arrive means to be here, to be where I am. Without any doubt, without any discussion, without any not wanting, now I am here. Let us just give us some breath to recognize I'm here. And you remember, arriving is always a process. You come from somewhere and then you arrived. So it's a kind of a arriving process. We have arrived. We are here. And the second step is uniting body and mind. The body is definitely here. Whatever we want it to be, whatever we want to be where, the body is here. And sometimes only the body is here and the mind is somewhere in dreams and hopes and whatsoever, you know. And so the next practice is again and again and again to unite body and mind. Bring the mind to the body. To give the mind an anchor and focus, somehow an object. But an object you choose. It's not the object the mind likes, a dream, a hope, a fantasy, something. You choose. You give the mind to say, now you are here. And it's a wonderful practice. It gives you a kind of stability and strength that you are the master. It's a great experience. You are the master. Throughout our life, we are not masters over the mind. We are just simply servant. And the mind does whatever it seems to like or dislike. And now, in the second practice, we bring the mind to the body, uniting body and mind. The third practice is the already kind of realization, because the mind is anchored, is brought to the body. It becomes focused. All these distractions and thoughts and ideas and whatever is normally happening in our mind has subsided. At least for now, it's not there. It's an immense, enriching and liberating experience. Many people are kind of haunted and by their thoughts, by this constant thinking, and they can't stop. And it's a very simple practice. Give the mind something to focus on, something it brings out of this turmoil of thinking. And it is a practice. It doesn't work like that, you know. It's a constant practice. The constant practice over years, it becomes a realization, a liberation. And you even can call it a habit. And slowly, slowly, all this turmoil in your head, this constantly overwhelmed by your thoughts and ideas, slowly, slowly lessens. And one day, you even discover, I don't think so much anymore. How come? What was the way to do it? There's no way. It's practice. It's constantly doing this practice. And so for now, within this tradition, we come to the fourth. It's a kind of a realization. This mind has opened up, it is present, it is there, it is awake. It's not hindered by any other whatsoever, you know. It is, so to say, free. You cannot say it's liberated as such. You know, all these things are still in the back and push to come in front. And once in a while you leave them and say, okay, hello. Let's just think about this and that. And then you find out it's all nonsense. It's just childish, you know. And you give your mind again this stability, this focus. And then you realize something has changed. You are in a state of mind which is awake, there, present. So, I talked about the field of awareness. You feel it. And I would really love that you experience this field of awareness, this energy of stability, of stillness, of presentness here. Because it needs a certain kind of energy of people. And only when you have realize that, experience that on your own, you can kind of bring it into your life, and maybe you spread that, maybe in the family, maybe in the office, and people will be drawn to that. You don't need to get the bell and constantly ring and say, "Hee." Just your being is the radiation. So let us just give 2 minutes time again to do these simple steps. Arriving, uniting body and mind, the experience of a mind which is free from thoughts, ideas. And because of that, it is alive, real, open, present. So after these 2 minutes, I invite the bell. Well, these practicing, I would say they bring us to us. Sometimes it's called coming back home, coming to our center, our centeredness, our stillness. It's a very personal interior experience. And as I'm constantly saying, we are doing it to improve a state of mind with which we can contact life, to be there for life, but in a different way, not with our usual conditioned fear-governed mind. So it's in the other wonderful picture I brought to you, where Thay says, our practice is always to go back to the present moment, to the here and the now. Only in the here and the now we can touch life deeply. So you see, this is this process. We don't kind of withdraw or are happy in this suchness and emptiness, but we kind of somehow stay just before the paradise. The door is open, but we don't go in. We say, sorry, I have something to do. There are somewhere folks down. They need my help. I just help them at least to come up to that, almost there. And then I release them and they go on and do the next step. And I'm happy and turn to the next one. That's traditionally called the Bodhisattva path in the Mahayana. So we are contented with how far we go. We have practiced a mind which is present there, and somehow this mind is empty. It's sometimes called a no mind, because the usual mind or conditioned is not really there. It sits in the back still. And when we are not really aware, it jumps in the front. And even the old practitioners do know that. And I know many people, not myself, but I know many people who then are disappointed. Now I'm practicing for so many years. It should not, I said, wait. That is traditional mind. It should not. There's no kind of friendliness, understanding, kind of not being too proud. The final practitioner, you know, who will never, ever something, it will. And there's nothing wrong with it. But I tell you, it will less and less and less and less. By itself. I mentioned sometimes this Trungpa Rinpoche, and he said once, when you practice long enough, you find your thoughts so silly and so crazy and such a nuisance that you stop doing it. That's great, isn't it? Yes. But sometimes they come in the middle of the night and knock. Traditionally, because of the energy system and the body, at 3:30. 3:30, 4 o'clock, the other system, the adrenaline system, starts. Very simple, you know. And then all these worries come in, you know. And then you lie on your back, I do it, you know, and just smile to them. I know they have nothing to do with me. They come out of the corner and they are happy, you know, like little gnomes running around and, you know. And you just look at them and say, oh, amazing, amazing, you know. And then about at 5 o'clock, 5:15, they are getting tired. Did you experience that? And then a kind of insight comes. It's all gone. They are happy and I am happy. You know. Yes, it's a deep practicing, and that the Dalai Lama, since his childhood, sits at 3:30 in the morning. That's why he goes to bed at 7, just to be ready for it, just to overcome with clarity and compassion these little gnomes running around, you know, and give them a different feed, you know, compassion, insight, and so on and so on. And they just kind of settle in and say, wow, okay. And then then he does his contemplation every morning. Contemplation of friendliness and compassion.
Contemplation of friendliness.
So, touching life. And the traditional term Thay is then using from the traditional teaching is to see things as they are. You have heard him saying that. And I'm again making aware this is not a kind of a philosophical, absolute perception. Thais and those people are criticized about that, but they are not really saying that. They just repeat a sentence, but they mean something different, and you have already realized what it is. You are in touch with life without the mind of directly judging, comparing, having ideas. Again, the Dalai Lama says with these glasses, these kind of red and blue and green or whatsoever, you know. You look at the reality, but you don't see reality. You see these blue one things, you know, in, like the sunglasses, they make it a little bit more brown, a little bit more yellowish or whatsoever. We human beings, in that state of mind we are normally in, which is our normal state, anxious driven, driven by survival mode, by our conditioning. And the condition is so deep that you believe something with which is true, which is absolutely not there. But someone has kind of imprinted that belief in you. It's like a hypnosis. And now you run around and believe that. You even see it, but it's not there. That is a very specific now turning point I like to make the practice to understand. It simply says, it's another term of an American teacher, to believe a fact to be true. So to see things as they are, it just simply says there is nothing to discuss. You can't not be against that, you know. There's no arguments about that, you know. And the situation I use normally is you look out and it rains. That's it. And however you now start discussing, how come, but the weather forecast and all these kind of nonsense, it doesn't do a little bit on the fact it rains. You understand what we are now practicing? We'll go through that in a kind of dramatic way to touch life, not something you put into life, your fantasies, your hopes, your whatever you hope life is giving you, the beauty and the joy and the sunset and I don't know what. You can do that, that's fine, but you might overlook the facts. And you might like. And that is the human predicament. You're discussing with these facts. It's a kind of a shocking realization that we're doing it. It rains. I always tell these kind of a story. I've made up. You imagine this beautiful, harmonious living family with this harmonious couple having two children. And they have now decided to have a picnic on Sunday. The children are excited. Mother is preparing the special food they only get and once in a year. The children got their tent and they are all excited to go outside. Everything is prepared and sure, tomorrow is a perfect weather for it. You have looked at the weather forecast. You bought this very special app and it very clearly says tomorrow sunshine. Okay? So you are sure and you are happy. You almost can't sleep. And then in the morning, mother gets up, draws a curtain. It rains. Everything gray. In English, you say it rains cats and dogs. You almost can't see 50 meters. There is no hope whatsoever that it will stop before you want to drive. Can you imagine just at that moment not doing more, not in any way, any thought in your mind is coming up which says no. You hear yourself even when you imagine this situation, this drama, you know, and you actually find someone guilty, let's say the man who has made up this app, or whatever, you know. You hear this, no, it should not happen. How can that happen? Is it so? So this next step in your practice is, it is. Full stop. You have realized that mind which can be clear, vivid, present, and you carry that into these situations which are normal. This is life. You have had these plans, these ideas, these hopes, and they don't work. In my Christian tradition, you say humans think and God decides. We don't need that. Rain is enough. Nobody has brought us in bad thoughts. Nobody wants us to be angry, nothing at all. It just happens. It rains. And you can go through your personal life and you find out certain things are just facts. There's nothing to be discussed about that. Nothing to be changed. It's a fact. Traditionally, I give you these practices. The other points you will find in your personal life when you disagree with facts. And this life is only made of facts. Earthquakes, tsunamis, Corona. Facts. About 1.5 months ago, usually in August, July, August, there is these heavy lightning and thunderstorms. And this year, the gods really like to shake us up. One night, it was such a bang that we all woke up. and the whole telephone system was gone. But the internet still worked. So someone of these guys up there, you remember these Greek something, you know? Someone said, listen, this was not proper. You know, the next night, another blow, and the whole internet was gone too. You know, effect. It took us about 3 weeks to just get the things ordered and built in, you know, and just a week ago, everything worked again smoothly. Effect. And you would know that there are facts. And your main energy, the main energy of the human being, really, it is no. At a certain point in the evolution of humanity, and this beautiful picture is the Garden of Eden, you know, when you kind of we're happy to be with all that which is around, you know, this paradise something. Some of these early ancestors said, well, I disagree. Or we had a different idea how it should be, something like that. And it is about 30 to 50,000 years ago, when all over the world people start painting in these caves, when then they started burying their ancestors in a different way, you know, they start believing into the way after, a life after life, and started to having ideas which no animal ever have and will have. So we human beings are very, very, very special. We have what is called, began with the technical intelligence. It sets us apart. Technical intelligence means you all of a sudden, or by trial and error or whatsoever, but at least you're already in this kind of a mind, God kicked you out of the Garden of Eden. You know, you got a stone and ticked on this nut and it sprung open. Said, that's it, you know. And so they started creating instruments, you know, to help them. That is called technical intelligence. It sets us apart from the very beginning. There are some animals like chimpanzees. Some of them, they can do that, the same thing, but then it's finished. And the wonderful is craws, they have been tested. The food was put behind a certain bar and they couldn't get it. And they got somewhere, got a stick in there, you know, and got it back. That is technical intelligence. Very few, but for us, look around. You know, and so this technical intelligence starts into the mind to say, we can do that. We are not dependent on things. Just let's think about it, you know. Why constantly walk around for distance and days? Let's see what we can do. And they invented whatever. And so the basic of our relationship to life is no. I know better. I want to have it different. I want to have it my way. And when we have it, and we have it, we start manipulating, we bring in our energy, and we are discontented, irritated, when things are not the way we want them to have. And I'm quite sure I touch the deepest core of not only humans as such, but us. How often in the day you find yourself on that? Why is it not that way I want it? You bring yourself in. Or you're kind of aggressive. It should be this way. And everybody says, well, your way, and I have my way. And so you have these clashes. So, to accept, to believe a fact to be true is a deep, deep practice. Some weeks ago, a woman, the first time, came to a practice center, and I gave similar kind of instruction. And then after some weeks, she said, I've had a realization this morning. I started to have my cup in the morning, my cup. This special one with these red hearts, this was my cup. And then someone took it. So, who took my cup, you know? And then this morning she reported. The cup was again gone. And she smiled. She felt this kind of, it's my cup. She said, what nonsense. It was never my cup. You know, I had the idea, oh, my coffee is only good with that cup. It is nonsense, you know. And she took another cup and it was good. It's liberating. For many, many people, it's such a liberating thing, you know. It's kind of revolting in your life to say, ah, yeah. So then, the traditional practice, some of you have heard about it, the five contemplations or the five remembrances. I repeat that for you. And you will find these are facts, the basic facts of life. And if you don't want them, you call them by names, suffering and don't know what. But if you believe them as facts, they are facts, nothing else, you know? And there's nothing to accept them somehow. Or tolerate them, or something like that. Nothing of that affects. Nothing to be discussed about, nothing to argue with, you know. We can, as followers of these first human beings pushed out of the Garden Eden, still say, well, let's see whether we can do something about them. It's okay, you know, but basically they remain facts. That is where we are at. We start to manipulate them, hoping one day they will not be there anymore. We get out of the facts out of our life. It's a deep, deep reason for suffering, because you're always lost. They are facts of life. So the first fact is sickness. It always says, we are, or I am of the nature of, to become sick. Whatever you try, some almost don't get sick. Most probably they die early enough. I'm not saying we should not kind of care about that, you know. It's not a kind of being victim about that. When you get sick, you ask for help to relieve the pain or whatever. But never have the idea one day humanity will not be sick. We can lessen that, we can do something about that, you know. It helps tremendously Let's say you flew over with your last money into this wonderful holiday place, the Bahamas or somewhere, you know, and you step out of the plane and break your ankle. Couldn't happen. Should not happen, but it happens. And then you are in this wonderful place lying in your bed. You could have done that to home, but now you have to fly there and lie in the bed. It's a wonderful bed, but still, it should not happen. And you kind of struggle with that. People then call, I have a bad karma, and this is really the most curious idea. It should not happen. It happens. And you are there with a fact. And you do about it. You might be brought outside in the sun and someone takes care of you and you have the best time ever. You don't have to sit in the bar in the night, but, you know, whatever, you know. It's a very often life is friendly to you to bring you these kind of things, you know. People learn here to be sick. They come and getting sick, and they're cared for, and they're calmed and say, well, okay, you know, it's a fact, you know. So it's a part of life, so we do the best for it. It's okay, yeah. So next time when you get sick, whatever that is, it's a fact. Care for it. Care is the most important human quality. Other animals don't have that. We even care for other beings. No other being cares for other beings. We are very, very, very special. Really, as human beings, we are very, very special. And we have to discover these human qualities. We will do that in the next days. For now, we come to the second contemplation. I'm of the nature to get old. And it's especially for those, mostly ladies, when the first wrinkles start, they start raising their money to get that off or do the operation or I don't know what, you know. It's fine, but you're getting old. You might get the wrinkles out of your face, but the energy goes, I tell you. You know, whatever you try, somehow this body gets old. it's not funny, it is like that, you know. Helga celebrated her 80th birthday in March. And she is really kind of an energy bomb since childhood. But now she used to say, when she gets tired, you know, as now she is overworked, she said, some years ago I could do that. to get old. And it's a wonderful experience, you know. You don't hear all these things you normally have heard and got frightened about it. You know? And so on and so on and so on. And so it had advantage, you know. Getting old is not a sickness. People believe now it's a sickness. It's not. It's getting old. It's a fact of life. And then the last or the most important sickness people fight with to their last breath. I am of the nature to die. And we don't die. The time is over for the body. It began, it grew up, it stayed for a while, and it disassembled, as everything in this world. Nothing whatsoever stays. Nothing whatsoever. And for some curious idea, we believe we are so special that really one day we manage not to die anymore.